Welcome to another episode of We Don't Die. I'm your host, Sandra Champlain, author of the international best-selling book called We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. And just a reminder, my home die.com, where you can always find our free Sunday gathering with medium demonstration included, join one of our classes, our Facebook community, now well over 7,000 people. And if you're a super fan of my work, you know who you are, you can join my Patreon club for as little as $1 an episode, no more than $5 per month, I promise you. You can receive all the podcasts that I do from both of my podcasts, this We Don't Die Radio and Shades of the Afterlife. You get them ahead of time. You get a clickable, searchable PDF file that's got everything, and it's well over episodes. So you super fans, you know who you are. Just go to wedontdie.com and you will find that on the front page. Okay. Our guest today is a very wonderful lady who loves to create. She's artistic in so many ways, but she says her best creations are her 6 children. Nicole Clark art and writing after her daughter Emberly passed. And she's the author of the book, Remember All That Is, Conversations with My Daughter After She Died. Nicole's mission is to share love and light and is passionate about helping each one of us feel our and experience true inner peace. Nicole Clark, welcome to We Don't Die Radio.
Thank you, Sandra. It's such a pleasure and a blessing to be here.
I feel exactly the same way. And I know you've been on the journey to look for evidence of the afterlife and through grief and healing and all, just human to human, on behalf of all of us, just sending you so much love for the journey you've been on. I feel there's nothing worse, nothing more crippling than grief and not being able to hold our loved ones again. So for what you've gone through, just sending you so much love.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And with that, very story to tell. Would you mind backing up a little bit and telling us, first of all, where you're from today and some of your background, a little bit about your family, and then we can move into your story and the book and things.
Okay. Well, I live in a very small town in Ohio, very rural, kind of in the belt. And when I first moved here about 12, 13 years ago, we thought that was perfect. It was the perfect place to raise our children. At that time, we had 5 children, and my husband and I have now been married 21 years. So about that time, we'd been married about 10 years or so. It was just a beautiful place to settle. Family and raise our kids in the Christian belief system that we believed in. And we were both raised Mormon, very, very strict, high demand religion. And for 37 years, I loved it and lived it with all my heart, my mind, and strength. And I believed it with every fiber of my being, is what I would say. And then about, how many years ago was it now? 2017. I can't do the math in my head. 7 or 8 years ago, my dad passed away unexpectedly. That like rocked my world. Death does that. I know you've experienced that as well. And it was like this aha moment in that night, that evening, when it was like, oh my goodness, not guaranteed tomorrow, right? My dad had lived every day as a workaholic, basically. He was just obsessed with working, loved it, had all these talks that he would give at church, like, work will win when wishy-washy wishing won't. And he had so many quotes that I could just read off the top of my mind because he would say them so often to him. And then my parents had gotten divorced back when I was in college. So it had been a long time since they'd been together. When my dad got remarried, he decided that his former kids were no longer a big priority. And he had been the pinnacle of my life, the man on the pedestal, right? He was my go-to. Many years during my marriage, I didn't get to see my dad. It was very, very rare that I got to see him. And finally, Sandra, at the end of, well, it was probably about 14 years that he had actually been to our home. He finally came and visited. And we were finally repairing our relationship. Things were great. And I was so excited. And then literally 8 months later, he was gone. And so I have great memories of the way it ended. We were finally able to rekindle some of that. He was making time for me and the kids and my husband, and that was wonderful. And then it was gone before we could like just really a lot of time together. And that was just a big, huge aha, wake up. Like, we're not guaranteed anytime. We never know when any of us are going to pass. Like, he was healthy and looked great, and you would have never known that he had a heart problem. And he had actually just had surgery about 8 months before he died. Soon after he left our house, found out he had a heart attack when he was here, which was like, we didn't even know. He just pushed through it because that's who he was. So his death really woke me up. It was the catalyst to me changing my life. Learning that if I want to live the best life I can and really enjoy my life, I can't wait till someday. I can't wait till the kids are out of the house. I can't wait till my husband retires or I retire. You know, I have to do it now because I might not have tomorrow. And that was a huge wake-up call for me, and I'm really grateful. Since then, you know, I've been contacting with my dad. It wasn't as strong, but like, I definitely have had signs from him. He was born on May 5th, 1955. So 555 has been a really huge, like, every time I see it, which is almost daily. Hey there, Dad. You know, it's just a beautiful way for him to connect with me. And that's been really fun. So after he died, I started researching. I had this like, oh my goodness, I want to be happy now. I don't want to wait for someday. Because at that time, I was really stressed all the time. I was a stay-at-home mom. Kids at home, constantly running from here to there and doing all the things for them and for my husband and for the community and for everyone but me, right? That's a normal, people pleaser. Had learned in my religion that it was my duty as a woman and as a mother to nurture my children and take care of everyone and everything. But I hadn't nurtured myself, and I hadn't really got to that point where I loved myself enough to put myself first or to take the time to nurture myself or to show compassion for myself. I could show compassion to everyone else. That was easy. But for myself, it was just kind of missing for a long time. And then I started reading voraciously after my dad died, so much so that it got to the point where I learned so much and was able to have so much less stress and more joy in my life that I wanted to share that with other people. So I wrote my first book, The 10-Minute Refresh for Moms. In there, I tell 10 different things that people can do in 10 minutes or less in their day, because I know what a busy mom, busy life is, that can really help you have less stress and more joy. And I was just living my best life. And at that point, I got pregnant with our sixth child. I didn't tell you earlier, but I had been trying my whole life to have six children. That had been my goal at 10 years old. And I had had five for a long time. And we had been trying for 8 years after my fifth child was born to have our sixth. And it was really hard. I got pregnant three different times, had two miscarriages, and then I had an ectopic pregnancy where I had to have emergency surgery. And I thought that that was a sign that, like, okay, that child is now gone to heaven or wherever they go. And that's my sign to just move on. I'll just be happy with these five. And I was content with that. That's where I landed, right? Like, okay, now, and at that point, my then youngest was going off to kindergarten. First time in probably 15, 16 years, I had some time to myself. I could read, or I could go to the store, I could exercise, I could do whatever I wanted. It was like, oh, and then I started like, well, what lights me up? I didn't know. Been so long since I had studied or looked at anything for me. And I remember signing up for this class I found on the internet. It was a lot of money at the time, but they would teach you how to go from A to Z, like from an idea in your head to getting it out there to marketing it and all. Sign me up. Soon as I signed up, got super excited, started writing, I got pregnant. I was like, oh, are you kidding? Like, I had kind of got to the point where I wasn't ready for that anymore and I didn't want it anymore. And I was like, oh, here's my sixth child. When you least expect it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a kind of manifestation works sometimes. Anyway, I got pregnant with my sixth child. And at that point, I had started questioning everything in my life. Also, on the night my dad died, I was introduced to, which I'd never heard of before. And I started doing a deep dive in a rabbit hole of into spiritual things, into like woo-woo things that were kind of outside of my comfort zone with the Mormon church, right? With like learning this is the only right way my whole life, and now being exposed to other ways, I was fascinated and turned on and excited. And I really wanted to learn more about this. And then it started making me doubt where I'd came from and doubt some of the religious beliefs that I was taught were the only right way. So that's where my, I guess my spiritual awakening started. I was always a very spiritual person, always had lots of dreams and lots of downloads or connections with what I then called the Holy Ghost. Now I know it's me or my higher self or what I consider to be God now. Either way, I've always been deeply and spiritually in tune and aligned and receive different answers at different times. So I started questioning the church and wondering if it was really the best place to raise my children, because I was seeing for the first time how harmful it could be to a lot of people who were different, you know, people in the LGBT community or people just who'd believe had tattoos or anything. Like, there was so much judgment embedded in the belief system that I was thought was the only right one, that I walked around with kind of a moral superiority for most of my life, right? I'm so much better because I believe this and you don't. And it got to the point where I couldn't live like that anymore. There were items on my shelf that it just broke. I felt like I have to leave or else. Oh, and then I had a serious issue with my health that caused me to really question things and say, is this really helping me or is it hurting me more? Right. It happened to be in my throat, which, you know, just had throat surgery. Really like the catalyst for me leaving the church, me saying my throat chakra is closed off because I haven't been speaking my truth and I need to do something about it or else I could die. Like, I literally could have died. So I left, and it's been a roller coaster of emotions ever since. And anyway,
no,
let me get a sip of water real quick.
You take a sip of water. No, we appreciate it, because so many people think that there's a lot of people that are spiritual since they're children and all that. But I think most of us, with some of the biggest stories to tell, never were. And then something happened. Then through the series of events, not only did you find out who you were, but now you're giving your knowledge to the world, and it comes out of the tough times. It's horrible that it does, but that's how we human beings seem to be able to grow the most and serve others. So continue your story.
Yeah, it's true. Like, somehow through tragedy, we can triumph even more and help more people. And I think that that's kind of part of our plan on a soul level, honestly. Anyway, so I would have regular dreams, and dreams have always been a way of spirit communicating with me or giving me premonitions of what's to come. I've had several in my life that were so real, and then they happened. For example, when I was 8 years old, I had a very, very vivid dream, and I can tell you spot on exactly, I can see it in my mind now, just as if it happened, like it was happening yesterday. Right now. And we were in some war zone, like some adobe village or something. It must have been a different time, but I was 8 and I saw my dad, like we were in a war, and he brought us together as a family and said, I've got to go outside and I've got to fight this war. You guys stay inside. Do not under any circumstances leave. And I remember go outside, and there was like this wall that he stood behind, and he got his little gun out and he was getting ready to shoot, and he couldn't get a good angle, so he stepped up on the wall, and as soon as he did, he was shot in the stomach and he toppled over, and I'm screaming, "Dad!" And at that exact moment, somebody in my room woke me up at 8 years old and said, Nicole, we've got to take your dad to the hospital. There's something wrong with his stomach." That was the first time in my life that I was like, what? Like, dreams have been like that for me for a long time. And they haven't happened like that extreme, except for twice. And the other one, while I was getting ready to write my first book, and I don't think I was pregnant with them really yet, but I kept having a recurring nightmare. And I know when they recur, that's probably going to be something that happens, which I hate, but also it prepares me. But I had this recurring nightmare that one of my children was going to drown, and it was going to And it was either going to be in our pool or our pond, and that it would ruin everything. It would be my husband's fault. I would divorce him. My whole life would fall apart. And all these things happened as a result of this.
And this was a dream that you had.
This was a dream that I'd had multiple times. And it was so terrifying. Tears every single time. And I'm like, no! It was like my worst nightmare, like literally my worst nightmare, right?
Of course. And
it was so powerful that so many times I worked through it. I did this process called fear setting. Like, if I'm having this recurring nightmare, what can I do to prevent this from happening? What can I choose to do now to be okay with if that does happen, to make it to become a victor instead of a victim? Like, I went through this whole process, and I did it in my first book. Like, I told the whole story, right? And then I was pregnant with Emberly while I was writing that, because my husband dig a pool or a pond in our yard, because he always wanted water. He's like a fish, and I hate water, and I'm the opposite. But I did not want any of that on our property until all of my children could swim across the county pool and back and make it safely. Like, that was my rule. So that could do that. And so we started digging, and as soon as we did, of course, I got pregnant again. I was like, and all the fears came up again. Then I had that nightmare, and it was just like, okay, what can I do to feel at peace here? Because it's terrifying. Nobody wants to lose a child, especially if wanted. So Emberly, this was like during the time when she was probably a toddler, when I realized that, oh, we need to get a pool fence. We need to get everything in place. This can't, like, no, before she was a toddler, she was like little, couldn't roll yet. Right. And then it happened during COVID, of course, where COVID made it to get what we needed. There was no pool supplies available. There were no people that could come and put a fence around it. And so I just lived in constant fear her whole life. I was just in constant fear. I had all these floaties and everything that I could to try to prevent anything from happening. She was born in 2018. Yeah. I'm trying to get my dates all together. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're under pressure being interviewed. So
yeah. Just relax. Take a deep breath. It makes it always makes me nervous sharing this story, because it's so sacred to me. And so, you know, it brings up emotions. So anyway, Emberly was wanted for so long, way before she was born, right? Like I told you, I wanted 6 children. So I had finally come to the point where I was like, I'm not going to have any more kids. And then I did, got pregnant with her, and it was the best thing that happens. And I was terrified, because we were in the process of putting things in our yard, and I was just like, oh my goodness. And I just lived in fear her whole life because of these premonitions, and not even just the pool one, but her whole life. It was like, she's not going to be here very long. Enjoy her while you can. I'd be sitting here working on my laptop and take a picture with her siblings. You're going to want that when she's gone. Like, all the time, like her whole life. I just was just like, why? And I kept thinking, this is just my fear. It's just my fear. But I never had that kind of fear with any of my other children. I never had these kind of premonitions. I never had, you know, all these constant. And so I know now in hindsight that this was just preparation for what was to come. Because in 2020, when everyone's home, and it was such a beautiful time in my life because all my kids were home together and they were getting to enjoy Emberly, and my children just adored her like crazy because she was just this little tiny cute little person, and she was so fun, and her personality was so bubbly and exciting, and she was just the love of our lives. And then in August, I was taking a couple of my children. We went shopping that morning for school. They were getting ready to go back to school. COVID enough that the kids could go physically back to school. And I was nervous. I was like, oh no, they're all going to go back. How are they going to be safe? And it was the first time I'd taken all of them to Walmart or to shopping in a long time, and probably Emberly's whole life, like a long time. So she was at Walmart. She's looking around like, oh, little kids. Like, she had never seen other little kids. Like, she had such a sheltered life. It was always just at home and just with so much love. And she loved going away. She loved going in the car. Her favorite thing was going bye-bye. And even if it's just a drive to go drop her siblings off somewhere at practice or something. loved it. And literally the week before she passed, I had taken her sister to a basketball practice and it was pouring rain, like really bad. And it was about 25 minutes away. We've been driving so much. And Emberly, once we dropped the sister off, I realized that she just, if I was dropping her sister left alone in the car, going away with her was not a good idea anymore. She just started crying like crazy the whole way home. And I sang Twinkle Little Star, her favorite song, probably 100 times on the way home, trying to calm her down. And it was like this, like, I probably shouldn't bring her anymore. It was a regret that I've had because she died a week later, because I didn't take her in the car with me, because I left her home when I brought her siblings to a birthday party. And I came home, my husband was home and all the rest of our kids were home, but I was gone. And I came up the driveway and saw an ambulance. And I knew immediately, Sandra, that that was the time I had to make a choice. Was I going to listen to or follow the things that I had prepared for? I knew right then that Emberly was on her way to the hospital and that she might not make it. I knew deep down that she wasn't going to make it. I went into a helicopter with her alone, with these men that were doing, she got enough breath that we were able to life flight her to a hospital. It was 2 hours away. And I got to be the one in the helicopter. And it was one of those sacred, horrible moments as a mother where you know that you have to let. And I knew that she needed my permission. Well, she wanted my permission. She didn't need it. She just wanted me to tell her that it was okay. And I had that moment in the helicopter where it's okay. We will be okay. I know that it's not ideal. None of us want you to leave. We love you to pieces, but you have our permission to go. And we found out a few hours later that she was brain dead, and I had to wait in the hospital by myself waiting for the kids and my husband to come up. And luckily they let the kids come in, because usually with COVID they wouldn't, but they let them all come in and say goodbye. And it was one of the hardest times.
Had she found her way to the pool? Is that what happened?
I wasn't there, but yes. There's different stories from different people in our family. My husband and a lot of the older kids were all outside playing basketball, which is literally like our pool. And somehow she made it out there. She had never been able to open a door or do anything. Like, we have no idea how she got out unless the door was left ajar. I don't really know. And it doesn't really matter at this point.
No.
My husband was the one to do CPR. He's a doctor and he was performing CPR as my that found her in the pool, and that's led a lot of trauma for him. And my older daughter had to call 911. It was just very traumatic for all of us. And for me to come in after the fact and see the aftermath, it was just so hard.
Something a family through, and accidents happen, and your mind can replay it over and over and over and over and over. And I know what guilt is all about. But for you and your whole family at the time, everybody was doing the best they could do.
Right. And it's hard to sometimes go back there. And I do still feel guilty that we didn't have the pool fence up, even though I know that could have happened anyway. There are still kids that drown all the time with a fence there, with family even sitting around the pool. Like, it happens like this. It doesn't take much time at all. And it's just little thing of awareness, right? And however, at this point, I have come to that place of so much love and gratitude for this whole situation and everything that's happened after it as a result, that I know it happened for me. I know it happened for a reason, and it breaks my heart, and I wish it didn't have to happen. I know that it was a soul contract that Emberly and I made, that she wouldn't be here long so that we could help a lot of people. And I also know now that it's a very temporary thing, that, like you say, we don't die. She's not dead. In fact, I feel her more powerfully and have a stronger connection with her now physically than when I did when she was here. And it's been a beautiful tragedy that has helped a lot of people. So I'm to that point now where I can forgive myself. I know that I did the best I could, even if it's something that I feel like sometimes my ego's, better. You could have put up a fake fence or something, you know. There's always the woulda, coulda, shoulda. They can eat you alive if you go there. And it can cause you to just feel so much depression and remorse. And that's not how Emberly wants me to live the rest of my life. And I've shared this story and talk and stuff, and people will just instantly judge you and say, oh, you killed your daughter on purpose to get famous, or you planned this so that you could write a book. And I'm like, whoa.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's awful.
That's like the worst case scenario for me. And I'm like, for real? Like,
people will always have.
Yeah.
You know, I stopped looking at the reviews of my book on Amazon because all it took was a couple really nasty ones, right? Mm-hmm. And it broke my heart. And meanwhile, there's, you know, hundreds of 5-star reviews and then a couple of jerks that say something else. And it's heartbreaking. I want to go back.
What happened to them, you know?
Yeah, I just want to go back. That mind of ours is brutal with the guilt and the feeling and all that. And I'm not 100% sold on soul contracts. While I do think that there really could be something to it, we'll know when we get over there. But is even in my own father's passing, the only way I could come to grips with the grief and even the whole breakdown of our family and the communication between my siblings and getting written off by my family members is that Dad and I signed up for this. Even my, we each had a role to play so we can make a difference for humanity.
Yeah.
So that is it, right? So that's what keeps me going. And mm-hmm. out of everything that happens, because you know, there's some really horrible things that happen. Whatever we human beings can for us to keep going. Do I believe accidents happen? I do. I do. But I think out of everything that we learn and everything that we go through, we can give a gift to other people who are on that journey. So anyways, that's all I wanted to say about that.
No, I think bad things happen to everyone. And I think that sometimes we take for granted thinking that if we're just living the right way and doing everything correctly, we're not going to suffer. And suffering is optional. You can choose to not suffer through something. And I think it's also a part of the human experience. If we want to have pain, we want to have suffering, because at a soul level, I don't think we feel that. I think that we just feel joy and happiness and love and peace and light. And we created Earth to come and experience the opposite.
Amen, sister. That is totally what I think as well. That is well. Yeah. What happened that you started being in touch with her? Because your book is channeling some of the really profound words of wisdom coming through her and your own soul. But how did that begin? There you are, grieving mom, in your own head, playing the scenarios. How did that begin?
Honestly, it was about 3 weeks after she died. A friend of mine referred me to a psychic medium who I was still like on the fence, like whether I believed in that or not, but I did it. I was like, anything at that point, when you lose someone so desperately to believe that they're still around and to connect with them, that you'll do anything. At least that's me. That was my experience. So I went to a psychic medium and she was the one that told me about soul contracts. I'd never even heard that term before. She told me that I had one with Emberly so that we could help expand the collective consciousness. And then she told me to start writing and that I could channel Emberly. And I was like, huh? Like, I've never done that. And like you, I was kind of skeptical. Didn't believe in that stuff at all because it was all woo-woo and out there. And I certainly didn't believe that I could do it. I had been meditating life and tuning into my own higher self or soul or whatever you want to call it. And so I started meditating every morning. And then I did a process called automatic writing. I was like, I don't know how to channel a book. I don't know how to talk to people who have passed away. I tried with my dad. I'd had the 555, like, but I hadn't really had a conversation or received anything from him. So I started automatic writing, which is basically just a process where I would do it right when I would wake up, because I think it's the theta brainwave that they tell you you're more susceptible to being able to receive things and not think about it too much, not overthink. I would wake up, meditate, and while I was meditating, I would just have my laptop open, usually with my eyes closed. Typing with my eyes closed became a superpower. And I would just start writing my feelings or what I dreamed about or whatever came up that morning. And then I would ask her questions. And when all of a sudden she would take over my fingers and just write the answers, like I could feel like it was not me typing anymore. Like it was just this process of just, it came through me. And every day I became addicted to that. It was like my healing more than anything else for the grief of just this feeling of every day I could connect with her in a powerful way and ask her whatever I wanted and get answers. And it was like,
could you feel her? Could you feel her love?
Yeah. I could feel as if she was me, like taking over my body and writing through the keys. And it was just such a beautiful way and to feel and to heal.
Powerful. I've just spoken with a few parents lately on episodes. One of them, psychology professor, Dr. Matt McKay, and he works that way with his son as well, Jordan. He never bought into any of this, but when you have a, as you go looking for answers. Mm-hmm. So he wrote a book called Seeking Jordan. And a few episodes ago, he taught how he does it. You know, same thing, get into that quiet place in the mind. He lights a candle, takes several breaths, gets in the zone, has something that belonged to his son. And even in the beginning, he says, if it's you, it's no problem, just keep with it. And then the same thing, all of a sudden he felt like his son was the one doing the writing and some really profound things were said, really profound.
So and that's a beautiful thing to hear because like a lot of people think, oh, I couldn't do it. You're finding more and more people. And I believe everyone can do it. You know, I know, I think you believe that too. Like everyone has the capability to see the signs and communicate and receive their own answers.
Let's talk about some of the things she said and also finish. I know you give a free workbook out for people about getting their own signs and being in touch with their loved ones. So we'll be sure to talk about that as well. But what were some of the things that started coming through that you just went, oh my gosh, because she was with you such a short period of time. What kind of things came through from her? That she loves you, mama. Right. Yeah. And the bigger picture here.
Oh my goodness. So many, there's so much stuff in this book and I'll show it to you really quick. Cause I don't think I have, but in the back of this, there's a topical guide, right. That has literally just 100 talked about. And for me, the most profound ones have always been about pain because I think as humans, we want to escape and run from and numb from pain. We don't like to feel it. We don't want to feel it. We do anything we can to not feel pain in any way, shape, or form. I was actually this morning, I've been rereading it to prepare for this interview, and I did a rabbit ears for a whole bunch of pages. And this morning, I was reviewing them, and literally, like the first 5 or 6 all had the same exact message. Like pain is for our gain. And if you don't mind, I would like to read some of it.
Yes, please. And I know the people who are on this channel cannot see this beautiful book. However, you can go see our interview. Just go to my YouTube channel. Just type in Sandra Champlain or We Don't Die Radio. And you can see the beautiful book called Remember All That Is, Conversations with My Daughter After She Died. Beautiful blue cover. Nicole Clark. Okay, back to you.
Thank you. So she talks about pain over and over because I was obsessed with pain. I was in so much pain, both physically and mentally and spiritually when she died, because I had left the church a year before she died, but I still doubted myself. Fear there. So a lot of our book topics are about my chronic pain, both physical and my mental pain of leaving the church. She explains it. She says it so much better than I can. So I just want to read it. Never underestimate the power of pain. It's for our gain and betterment. Humans are so paranoid and anxious not to feel or allow pain that they often make its effects so much worse than they need to be. Pain, pressure, fear, and all the quote negative emotions are very important. Pay attention to them because they always carry a lesson and a knowing with Learn to appreciate and welcome every feeling as you would a lost orphan who needs food, water, and a hug. Love them, give them your time and attention, and they will bring you comfort and joy that not even comfort and joy can bring. I was like, whoa, that seems profound. I'm trying to wrap my pain can bring more pleasure than comfort and joy. I was very skeptical. Like, what are you talking about? And she said, it's always a matter of perspective and how you view things. The minute you change your view of painful things into what can I learn from this and how is this helping me, you will find much greater appreciation for the opportunities. In another section, she talks about healing. And I think so many of us are obsessed with healing and not being the way that we are. We want to just feel whole again, right? And we feel like something's missing. And for her, she told me basically that healing is just a matter of perspective. We're already all perfect and complete. It's just allowing all of the things that we feel. And she gave me an acronym. Well, actually, she didn't give me this acronym. I just had it recently of HEAL is having human emotions or experiences and accepting them with love. Accepting the feelings and things that we experience with love. Accepting them, not resisting them, because what you resist persists, right? We constantly don't want to feel pain, but if you embrace the pain and treat it like an orphan or a little kid or your inner child and attention it needs, it usually doesn't last as long as you think it will. If an emotion that's felt or expressed actually goes away much faster than one that's repressed and not allowed to be seen.
Absolutely. I want to ask you, she speaks to you not as a toddler, but as an old soul, a soul. Was that a little bit shocking? Because these words yes. that are flowing through you, that you know you didn't write, but she's a baby.
Yes, I really was concerned about that at the beginning. I was like, am I just making this up? Am I trying to make myself feel better? Because a lot of people are like, they would tell me that. I'll feel better. You're kind of delusional. And I was like, these are not words that I could come up with. Like they're not concepts that I'm, you know, consciously aware of. Right. And I doubted myself. I doubted my ability to channel for a long time. And I certainly doubted that a toddler could write this stuff. Right? But she tells me that when you return to all that is, you become backed with all that is. You have all the wisdom and knowledge, and there is no age, there is no time, there is no space there. It's just all one. We're all oneness. And every single one of us from this life is there and can tap into the all-knowing. And so every answer that came from her was from this all-knowing power, this all-knowing source of wherever we came from, all that is. That's what we call it, all that is, because that's our new term, I guess, for God. For created us for source energy or whatever you want to say, that that's who we are. And I love the way that she gave me the title of the book, because for me, it was such a profound experience. We'd written the whole book within the probably the first 4 or 5 months after she died, over 200,000 words, short amount of time, like crazy amounts, right?
Oh my goodness.
Very long. And then I sat on it. For over a year, I was too afraid to share it, too afraid to publish it. I didn't want the backlash. I didn't want all the people in my former belief system like leaving me, even though they kind of already did, you know, not to feel any more pain in addition to the pain I was already feeling. So I put it on the back burner and I was like, I don't even know what to name it. I don't know what I would do. And I just put it away. And then I was listening one day while I was creating art, which was another huge form of my healing, was just putting my pain into things, creating beauty from or pearls from my pain is what I'd call it. And I was listening to a YouTube. It was Kyle Cease. I haven't listened to him for a long time, but at the time I listened to him all the time. And he was saying he had just gone to a darkness retreat. And I was like, what's this? I'd never heard of it. Life. And it didn't sound like something that I would normally have wanted, right? But my soul was like, you got to go. You got to find a darkness retreat and go. And I was like, what? So I looked it up and ended up going that November. So it had been like a year and a few months since she died when I went to this darkness retreat. And my soul was so going there was to get proof, because I had doubted this whole time that this book was from her or from me or from my higher self. I didn't know. Like, I wanted proof. I wanted to see her, because for me, like, just feeling her and channeling her wasn't enough, apparently. I wanted to know. And I wanted the name of our book. Well, was intense. If you ever imagine meditating, a lot of people can't even meditate for an hour, you know. This was 10 days by myself in a man-made cave with no light, no sound, no other humans, and food came to me twice a day through a double door where he'd ring a bell and he'd put the food in, and then I'd know for the day. And it was intense. Like, intense.
Did you have toilet facilities and all that?
Yes. Yes. There was a toilet and there was a bath and there was a bed and a place for me to sit on this little ground for food or whatever. So all the necessities were taken care of, but yeah, it was intense. It took 5 days before I had anything really happen. I was just bored to tears, wondering what time it was. I didn't know if it was day or night. The only thing that I had to kind of do time, which I realized as humans, we are obsessed with time. We really just want things to move and to know. And when you're in a timeless place with darkness and you really don't know, it really messes with your head. Like, I was really in a weird state of mind, but I was determined. I really wanted answers. And I brought a notebook that was like a 3-ring binder so that I could write in it and then turn the page and know that I was again, because I'm writing in the dark. Again, another superpower. I realized I could read my writing after when I was writing in the dark. So I would write a lot, everything that would come to me. But things didn't start coming to me until day 5. And I was sitting there by myself, bored to tears, wanting something when she finally came. And she, before I went there, my editor and I had discussed names, but we weren't really sure what to call it. Anyone who knows anything about SEO, which is search engine optimization, you want keywords, you want things that people in your niche or who would be interested in it to be able to find it. So we wanted something that people would know what that is. She had said maybe returning or return to all that is, because all that is kind of a spiritual phrase that a lot of people recognize. And I was like, okay, I like that. I'll work with that. And when I went in with Emberly or into the dark room, Emberly came. I didn't get to see her, but I did feel her and get the answers that I wanted. And the download of just trusting that it is her. It's, this book will help a lot of people. And in that dark room, she was like, Mom, the name of the book, Returning or Returned All That Is, it's okay, but it's not exactly how it works. Is you are now, you always have been, and you always will be an integral and necessary part of all that is. You and everyone else makes the wholeness of all that is. You cannot not be part of it. So it's more of a remembering. And I want you to name the book Remember All That Is and Ember. And then remind people that an ember. And this is why we named her this. I forgot to tell you that when we were naming her. An ember is like a part of a fire that seems separate. It seems like it's dead. It seems like it's away from and doesn't have the power, but it can be brought back to life with a little air and a little force. And soon it can be back to the whole fire. And that's exactly how we are as souls coming here on earth. We forget who we are on purpose. We plan that. And when we remember all that is, when we remember who we are, we come back to that wholeness. We come back to that fire within. We light that ember and we feel whole again. We feel complete and we don't need anything else to fulfill us. And that was a profound moment in the dark room.
That's incredible. And I know you're getting emotional, but it's touching in with your own divine source. That's who we are. And I think anybody who's listening or watching to these episodes, it's helping remember who we truly are, these beautiful souls having that human experience that we step into this world. And I think sometimes we make an agreement that we won't remember who we are. And then we get to unfold that while we're used to. So it's beautiful. Yeah. I love the book cover and remember with the embers in white and your daughter, Emberly. So beautiful.
Yeah. It was a beautiful moment where I was just like, oh my goodness, it all comes together now. I realize why we named her Ember. Like, that wasn't a name we had. We didn't even we thought she was a boy the whole time, the whole pregnancy. And then she was born and he was like, congratulations, it's another girl. Because we already had four other girls. And we're like, what? And
what did you do in the rest of the dark time before you continue on?
Oh, let's see.
Did you have communication with her?
I can't even believe
a human being would do something like that. I didn't know that those kind of retreats existed. And I also think, what a wake-up call it could be to undergo something like that.
It was crazy. I'll tell you, it was so intense, but worth it. And then I had many other moments. I had one, this one's crazy. I probably never told anyone this, but I'll tell you because you asked. I had this insane dream, like the scariest nightmare I've ever had. It literally felt like I was watching the worst horror movie ever. Dream. I had it. There was a serial killer on the loose in some town that I didn't recognize, literally taking body parts off people and hanging them around town. Like you'd see a hand hanging from something. You'd see a head, you'd see arms. And it was just, I was so terrified, right? This dream, it was so scary because every once in a while, my third eye will open and I'll see something. And this hadn't happened for a long time, but I was in the darkness and I started seeing a noose come down from the ceiling and hanging from the room I was in. And they said, we brought you here to kill you. And I was like, what? I'm in the middle of the woods, in the middle of a forest. There's no Wi-Fi there. There's no power. There's only one guy that I know that came to bring me food. I'm like, I was terrified. And I'm having this dream that like this loose and I'm the next victim, right? And afterward, I talked to the wife after I was done with the whole retreat. And I was like, that was literally the most terrifying dream I've ever had. And I really thought I was going to die in that room. Like I just thought somebody was going to kill me. And she was like, that's crazy. Other people have had that. And the imagery she gave me said, but there's some goddess in some belief system where it's a woman that's a warrior holding heads and arms. And like, it represents the death of the ego. And I was like, whoa.
That's heavy.
That's one way to do it. Yeah. So that was a cool experience. I haven't really told that story before because it was just one of those where I'm like,
it's okay. I know my personal beliefs because some dreams and I have nightmares and I've got all, you know, craziness. But when you think of a boat and a bilge pump, right? A boat gets rid of all the water that's in the hull. When we can really quiet our mind, our subconscious starts coming out through different ways and they come out in our dreams and they can be those scary things. And like you say, what you resist persists, but if you're being with it and you're present, then it can let go. So it can be filled up emotions. It can be all of that. But I love the death to the ego because that ego, boy, needs to go. You know, that's one of the big things I'm looking forward to after this life is, you know, the good stuff about us remains, but that nasty little ego that's not our best friend that stays here on earth.
Yeah, I'm trying now to just embrace my ego, like the pain, and love it for what it is. It does try to keep it, tries its best, and it's not who I really am, you know?
Exactly.
Trying to like live both worlds, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Nicole, tell us about that free workbook. I know time goes by fast that we're together, but your website, how to connect with loved ones who have passed. And anyone can go to embersglowstudio.com. And then when you just click on the courses and the books, you'll find it. Just scroll down towards the bottom.
Yeah, you can get it there.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
It's just I put together all the signs that I have found for myself personally, and that I've read about other people finding, how people can connect with the same way that I did with Emberly, because I do believe it's something that everyone can do and that they're waiting for us. And I think one of the highest, the best keys, well, if they don't want to get the workbook, if they just want to know now, is when we are living our best life, when we are filling our own tank and trying to find the most joy, we see the signs so much easier. And I know that's hard to do when you're in grief. And I know that it's not impossible to see the signs when you are grieving. tuning in to the higher self and to, I don't know, your highest vibration, whatever lights you up the most, whatever brings you the most fun. And really tells me to focus on the fun. You don't have to get anything done. When you're doing that, you can see the signs so much easier. And there's so many of them. There's so many of them. For me, 333. Emberly was born in room 333 of the hospital. And recently I told you I was getting surgery again. And I was really nervous this time. I don't know why, but I had literally like last 2 months ago, I felt like I was going to die. I didn't know that I was going to make it. And when I went to the hospital, walked to the room where I was having surgery, the room was 333. And it was just like this immediate peace washed over me. Like, knowing that she's always there and we are always taken care of. And that's the best message I could give to people is live life in a way that lights you up, that makes you feel love yourself. And when you do, your loved ones will be so much easier to connect with and to feel their love and see all the signs that they're sending because they're always there.
Absolutely. And I have a sneaky suspicion, your book, The 10-Minute Refresh for Moms, Less Stress, More Joy, you don't have to be a mom.
Oh, you're right. The man who did the Audible book for me, he edited for me. He was like, you just need to reword the title. And this could be for dads. This could be for anyone. I was like, I know. They just told me when I was taking that course to niche down to a specific genre of people or whatever. And I'm like, really? There for anyone. You're right.
Well, that's just it, because those things can help us be present and have more joy. And it's so important. This journey of being human is really tough, right? Anybody who thinks it should be easy, yeah, don't we all? But I don't think so. It's the tough stuff really that can give us our purpose in life, and we can share with others, we can make a difference, and it's all so powerful. I'm going to ask you in just a second some closing words that you may have, something you want to share, but I know is behind the scenes and your family as well. And just on behalf of all of us, you've gone through a horrific time, but you are a living example of transforming that grief and shining a mirror on yourself. What is it that I can learn? What can I do? Nicole, you've gone on this journey. There's people that experience grief and they die inside. And you didn't do that. You went looking for answers. You went, what can I do? So many people don't either want to take the steps to move through grief, active in communicating with their loved ones. And it's not our fault. I do think we have that ego that's trying to convince us that none of this is real. And I know there's mediums out in the world. People think, oh, if I go to a medium, but there's a lot of bad mediums out there charging a ton of money. So right now, I want to give as many tools that people can connect one and feel that presence. And it's not that they'll only come if you go see a medium. No, your loved ones are an active part of your life. They're right by your side. They're loving you. They're living life with you. And through your eyes, they continue to grow and learn and explore on the other side and be with loved ones and the pets and all that. They're active. So Nicole, I just want to thank you really, because you're showing us the way. And I think if it's possible for you, I know there's people listening and viewing and thinking, gosh, if this lady did it, this is possible for me too. And as much as you'd love Emberly back, which a parent would, but the difference you all are making for so many, probably hundreds of thousands, if not more, because I know this show and the other interviews you've done and your book just have a ripple effect. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for having a platform in which we can share our and help give hope to people, because honestly, that's what keeps us alive a lot of times is hope, you know, having that belief that there is something I can gain from this experience, and just being able to share it with other people, it really makes it easier or more, I wouldn't say worth it, maybe, but you know, I would definitely choose to have her back if I could. And since I can't, I'm making the best of it and trying to help as many people in the process as possible. And her words are just amazing. We didn't really get to cover that very much, what she taught in the book, just a tiny little snippet, but honestly, she's just last night, I was really struggling with one of my kids and not knowing how to parent. I went into my book, and this is what I do. Like, you can literally use it like, I don't even know how I'd explain it, but I just came in here and opened up, and it was the exact words I needed to hear in that moment. And so that's happened so many times, and not just to me. People have reached out to me and told me, that's exactly what I needed to read today. Like, you don't have to read it in chronological order, which is a beautiful thing because a lot of people don't have time for that. You can just read one day at a time, because I did it by days after she died. And it's just it's a remarkable thing when we can turn our pain into pearls, gain something from it that other people find beauty from.
Yeah. Do you want to open to a random page now and see what we get?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's see. I have to find one that doesn't have just me talking, because some of them.
That's no problem.
Let's see.
And I want to remind everybody, the name of the book is Remember All That Is: Conversations with My Daughter After She Died. And you can go to random pages. You can look at the back of the book, because there's all kinds of topics listed in what page they are, where you can find that. Amazing things in here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a conversation back and forth the whole time. It's not just me ranting or her ranting. It's literally us talking back and forth. So I just opened up and I was saying, I have a lot to improve. And actually, you don't have to improve anything. That's the biggest problem that most people fall for in life, that you need to fix things and make them better. What would happen if you just accepted it and didn't take any steps to try to make it better? You mean if I ignored the pain and acted like it wasn't there? No, ignoring and accepting are totally different things. When things or people get ignored, it makes them worse, not better. But when they are lovingly held and adored and treated like they belong, they heal. Isn't that what we were talking about?
I love that. Thank you.
I could go on and
so
on.
Much. So much. Okay. So your website is embersglowstudio.com. And of course, we got your books there and some other things, but there's some of your art there and art courses too, right? People can discover that, because I love it. We need to channel our grief somewhere or even make ourselves happy. A good way is being creative. Do you want to just mention that before we go?
Sure. Art therapy was so healing for me, being able to express myself with different color palettes, different crystals. I use a lot of crystals in my art, which are healing in and of themselves. Each of them has a different healing capacity or property, and being able to put that in art and create pain and then help other people have that as an example in their house. They just look at the art and can remember the message that comes with it, that you can create anything from your pain, and you can make it into something that helps other people and that heals your heart and helps you remember who you are.
Beautiful words. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me. I love you.
I love you too. You know, soul sister, you just meet people and you just connect with them, and you're one of them. Thank you. And for our listener or our viewer, thank time to be with us. Remember, please go visit Nicole's website, embersglowstudio.com. And of course, read her beautiful book as well. What else do I want to say? Just a reminder, home base is wedontdie.com. Find between my two shows over 600 hours of episodes. Lots of good things. There's plenty of reasons out there to believe in the afterlife. The thing is, we can wait for things to happen, or we can make them happen. That's the words of my mom, Marion Champlain, who's upstairs right now. Our ego is going to want us to prevent looking for this. It's going to try to convince us that we are not connected to all that is, that we are alone, that we're different, that we're separate. None of that is the truth. Stay connected, whether it's reading good books, whether it's listening to podcasts, whether it's people. Great that you can share in this conversation with. Also important, every week, 2 o'clock New York time for the past 4 years, we're going on our fifth, we have a free Sunday gathering, inspirational and very empowering service. It's not religious, but it is lovely. So we empower you last 45 minutes or so of each and every one is a medium demonstration. So you get to see how close your loved ones truly are. It's just beautiful. I'm so proud of myself and the team that has created that. So wedontdie.com is where it's all at. Go check it out. And in closing, my name is Sandra Champlain, and I'm honored and delighted to be your host on We Don't Die Radio. I do believe that life is an education for the soul and that your life here on earth is very important. So check out the beautiful book, Remember All That Is, because you are a fan. You are. You're one of a kind, and you're perfect just the way you are. So I want to thank you for watching or for listening, and we'll see you again soon.